Grand Slam track was supposed to be the reinvention of professional athletics. Michael Johnson's vision for a league structure that could make track and field financially sustainable outside the Olympic cycle. Its collapse has been painful, and this week Johnson broke his public silence on the disputed $500,000. His explanation is that the money was a reimbursement for personal funds he'd invested in the organization, not an inappropriate withdrawal. He called creditors' characterizations the most hurtful thing he'd experienced professionally. Whether the accounting supports his version remains to be established, but the episode illustrates how difficult it is to build sustainable sports leagues in disciplines without major television contracts.
The AI and entertainment story is one I find genuinely interesting because of how quickly the backlash has moved. A year ago, the conversation was about whether AI would be disclosed. Now, industry insiders are describing AI use as a kiss of death for projects. The mere perception that a film, a novel, a game, or a piece of music used AI, generative tools, is enough to tank audience reception. That's a significant cultural shift in a very short time.
The fan-made Red Dead Redemption remaster is a perfect case study in this tension. A group of volunteers spent years building a high-fidelity visual overhaul of the original game using modern rendering techniques, better textures, improved lighting, updated gameplay mechanics. It's free, and it's creating an awkward situation for Rockstar Games, which owns the IP and hasn't released its own official remaster. The legal landscape around fan modifications is genuinely murky, and Rockstar's response, or lack of one, will be watched carefully.
Hunter Biden's BBC interview this week was difficult to watch. He described his father's prostate cancer as having metastasized further, calling it very painful and very debilitating. Joe Biden has largely withdrawn from public life since leaving the White House, and this interview was one of the more candid public accounts of his condition. Whatever one's politics, it's a humanizing moment in a highly politicized news environment.
NYPD's warning about Zohran Mamdani's rhetoric, creating what they called a powder keg, ahead of Benjamin Netanyahu's visit to New York, reflects the genuine security challenge of managing high-profile diplomatic visits in a city where public opinion on Israel-Gaza-Iran policy is sharply divided and intensely felt. Mamdani, the progressive New York congressman, has been vocal in his criticism of both Netanyahu and U.S. policy in the region. The NYPD characterization of his speech as a security threat rather than political speech is itself a significant statement about where law enforcement draws that line.
The California Influencer Disclosure Bill connects to something broader about the information environment heading into the next election cycle. Paid political content has become one of the primary mechanisms through which political campaigns reach younger voters. Requiring disclosure and actually enforcing it with meaningful fines would change the economics of that channel significantly.
Okay. Let's spend the second half of this segment on something we've been threading through the entire episode, and I want to be intellectually honest about the limits of what we think we know. The consensus view, inside Washington, in the financial markets, in the analytical community, is that the Iran conflict is a war of attrition that will eventually force Tehran to negotiate because its economy cannot survive indefinitely. Sanctions, Hormuz's double-edged costs, the military toll, the assumption is that Iran blinks first. What if that assumption is wrong?
It's worth taking seriously. The core assumption rests on two premises. One, that the Iranian regime's primary motivation is economic survival. And two, that internal pressure from economic pain will translate into political concession. Both of those premises have failed before. The Iranian government survived the 2012 to 2015 sanctions regime, which reduced oil revenues by roughly 80% at their peak, without making fundamental concessions until the JCPOA negotiations created a face-saving framework. They waited it out for 3 years of severe economic contraction.
And the regime's structure is specifically designed to absorb economic pain without the political consequences that would force a democratic government to change course. Dissent is suppressed. The Revolutionary Guard has parallel economic networks that insulate the security apparatus from the hardships felt by ordinary Iranians. The people most affected by inflation and shortages are not the people making decisions.
There's also the Mojtaba Khamenei variable. If the new supreme leader is genuinely ill, as Israeli and opposition sources claim, then internal succession dynamics may be shaping Iranian strategy in ways we can't model from the outside. A regime in leadership transition may be more risk-averse and more hardline simultaneously, unwilling to make concessions that could look like weakness at a moment when internal authority is being consolidated.
The counterargument to the consensus, the thing that would need to be true for Iran to hold out longer than anyone expects, is that Tehran has assessed the domestic political situation in the U.S. correctly. They've watched the Vance-Rubio split become public. They've seen Congress fail to pass a war authorization. They've watched Democratic senators call for ending the conflict. If Iran believes the U.S. political coalition supporting the war is more fragile than its public posture suggests, then waiting becomes a rational strategy.
So here's what to watch. The specific indicator that would signal the consensus is right, Iran is moving toward negotiation under economic pressure, would be a resumption of indirect talks through Oman or Qatar, which is how the 2015 deal was eventually scaffolded. Not the intermediary message passing, Arachi described, but structured back-channel negotiations with an agenda. If that doesn't materialize within the next 60 days as the economic data from Iran gets more dire, then the bet that pain produces concession may be failing. And we should start taking seriously the scenario where Iran's calculus is different from what we've assumed.
That 60-day window is a concrete thing to watch. Noted.